Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. It is Friday morning after the draft. I'm Patrick Daugherty, joined by Mr. Kyle Dvorchuk and special guest Connor Rogers. All of us are quite rested. We went to bed early, got up early. I've had just one cup of coffee, not two or three. We're all ready to go after one night of the NFL draft. Connor, you were stuck in traffic overnight? Is this the horrors of the New York metro corridor?
Yeah, and it's Connecticut, even worse. Like, why is this happening? Road work at 1 in the morning, tractor trailers everywhere. It all worked out. Everything's fine. I'm quite rested and ready to roll.
I'm rested and ready to roll, too. I was up till, quote, only 1 a.m. doing my first round recap. You can find it on the website, breaking down every single skill. Pick me. It is the ultimate first world problem, but the draft 3 days, they're a slog. A tough time for us content creators. But we're going to take you through all of it. And, you know, it's not as tough of a time as it is for Falcons fans. And we're just going to start there, Connor. And, Connor, it says nothing about Michael Penix, the player or the prospect.
Right.
Like, we know you're a Michael Penix fan, but that selection, I don't really think I'm being hyperbolic when I say it's maybe the most surprising I've seen, at least in, like, the past 20 years, you know, where the boards have, like, tightened up. People, like, don't go rogue nearly as often as they used to in the NFL draft. And I just can't get – is there any possible way to justify selecting a 24-year-old rookie who's probably going to sit for 2 years in, like, a most realistic scenario? It might only be one. I mean, it could be more than two in an outlier scenario. I just don't – a team, too, that's, like, all in. When you sign the veteran quarterback, you give him $100 million guaranteed? It's an all-in type contract on a veteran quarterback, and then you don't use that draft capital on a weapon or someone to help on defense. Just – what do you think about the process of this pick, and can it work? Question mark. I just don't even know where to begin with the Penix pick.
It can work because he's a talented quarterback, but you're right about how, like, convoluted it is, Pat, right? Like, this is just, it's so hard to process in the short term because it goes against the grain of really everything associated with the pick. And what I mean by that is Penix, in my opinion, I mean, I was one of the highest people on him. I thought he was the most pro-ready pocket passer. So you think of teams, Minnesota, right? Like, maybe the Giants, if they were really done with Daniel Jones, like, okay, you're going to play Penix, but you know what, Minnesota, he's going to beat out Sam Darnold. Or the Raiders, he's going to beat out Gardner Minshew. I didn't think the Broncos were ever in on him as much as he had a visit with them, but he wasn't the draft and stash guy. That was Drake May to an extent. That was JJ McCarthy for sure. There was other guys in this draft that you look at because they were younger. They were a little bit more raw. They need the game to slow down a little bit for them, and they need to break bad habits. Penix went through all that when he transferred from Indiana to Washington. He already had his, you know, like, marinate time. Like, I'm going to figure out how, like, to turn into a pro at Washington. And he did, under a guy that's now a pro offensive coordinator in Ryan Grubb. So when you look at the situation, it's so baffling because you really like the player. There's a chance that Kirk Cousins has another season-ending injury and Penix comes in and he leads the Falcons to the playoffs. And everybody was like, see? But that's not how you, like, process draft picks. No. So it's weird to me because you could sit there and go, well, Cousins is 36, but then why did you give him $100 million guarantee?
It's like, why did you?
Every time you come up with a reason, there's a reason behind it why it doesn't make sense. So it is one of the harder ones to process for me. And to be honest, you almost feel bad for everyone involved because it's the best moment of Penix's life, right? He's taken in the top 10 when a lot of people never thought that could happen. And then it's ruined by every reporter talking about how furious Kirk Cousins is. Cousins is justifiably angry because it feels like he was swindled. So, like, well, who's in the win here right now?
And you hit on so many important points. The number one is you can't be 24 years old and be the draft and stash. And
no, it's not common practice.
The guy's the 2018 tab on his Sports Reference. This guy's been playing college football since 2018. Like, he's either ready or he's not. You don't draft and stash the 24-year-old. The Giants, by the way. You mentioned the Giants. Like, if you're a team with an expensive quarterback and you're going to draft, like, a rookie like that, make it the Giants. The guy's got 1 year left on his deal. He's gone after 2024.
Yeah, they clearly don't like him.
Yeah, exactly. That would have made so much sense. Like you said, that's just the real tragedy of it. I mean, that's too hyperbolic of a word. But no one can be happy now because Michael Penix, he wants to come to the league and play. He's been in college football 6 years. Like, he's already – a lot of rookie quarterbacks are going to be 2 or 3 years into their rookie deal. But now he wants to play, but now he can't play. Kirk Cousins, like, can't relax because it's the classic, like, what, after week three, he has 3 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. What are Falcons fans?
Right. With a torn Achilles off his plant leg.
Yes.
Like, what if he's not Kirk Cousins in September? He really is Kirk Cousins at the end of October. But then at the end of September, everyone's like, put in Penix. Like, what are we doing?
No, exactly.
And then, like, you're dealing with, like, a Russell Wilson contract on your books. Like, oh, man, there's a lot of mess here.
And then the third loser is just the Falcons, Kyle, because they're an all-in team, at least for this division. I mean, no one's really taking the Falcons seriously as a Super Bowl contender. They're all in on winning the NFC South in 2024, but now they have a first-round pick that's not even going to play.
This is like, you know, we talk about it in fantasy a lot, but it applies in, like, any sort of probability-based game, which, like, the draft in the NFL is. It's like, what do you win when you win? Okay, so Penix is really good. That means if he's really good and you find out right away, it means you just burned, like, $100 million on Kirk Cousins, because, like, you normally would not find out right away if you have Kirk Cousins on the roster. If Kirk Cousins is really good and Penix is really good, you are paying the premium for Michael Penix right now, and then you're paying his contract. Let's say Kirk is good for just 2 years. He's great for 2 years and retires after a Super Bowl. You basically get 2 years of the rookie contract, whereas most teams get 4. And I think a good outcome is, right, in Penix's third year, we think he's good, we don't know, but then you're sort of in a like rock and a hard place. Do we pick up his fifth year option? Because that's when you start having to make that decision. And we saw it with Jordan Love. Jordan Love, like, undoubtedly ended up being a good pick in the long run. And they have completely burned the cap value they gained from that pick already because his rookie contract is nearly up. I think they didn't pick up his fifth year option, but, like, they basically signed him to what amounts to a fifth year option. They're already out of that, like, oh, this is the sweet spot money window. They're almost already out of that. And this is what it looks like when it hits.
Yeah, it's true. That is when it hits. And like kind of said, every pro Penix point you can make, there comes then an immediate, well, yeah, but actually that still doesn't make sense. Because some people are comparing it. Well, Jordan Love sat for 3 years. And, well, Jordan Love was 22, and he was selected in the 20s, which maybe isn't that big of a difference to say. It was still a first-round pick, but he was in the 20s. Both in his pick and his age were both in the early 20s. It's just not an analogous situation. And yet everyone's just going to be yelling. Like, producer Adam makes the point here. But Kirk Cousins probably isn't going to play in the preseason as he finalizes his recovery from a torn Achilles. Michael Penix just lights it up. I think Falcons fans will say, oh, you know, well, whatever. We love you. We'll see you in 2 years. Like, the whole situation is just a toxic brew right from the start.
I guess if you have to argue for it, because no one is, right?
Yeah, like, so make no the argument so for it.
Let me find the only way you could argue for it. And I, like, people, please don't call me insane. I'm trying here. Is that they know with Cousins – the next 2 years, which is, you know, a lot of his money, of course, they're never going to be in this division. They're never going to be picking in this range for a quarterback. And the only reason they got a quarterback of this caliber at 8 is because the class was deep, right? It was a deeper class. So this is the problem with coaches getting involved in the scouting process late, right? It would blow people's minds if they knew, like, the average time coaching staffs got involved in scouting. It's because they go through a long season. Then they go through pro free agency, and then they get into the actual process. So when they look at a guy and they fall in love with the quarterback, they're sitting there and going, yeah, Kirk is going to probably make us look good now and probably the year after that. are we just doomed after that? Now we have the successor in place where they probably got themselves already that second extension 2 years from now. I know it's hard for people to justify all of that, but that's the coaching lens of it, is that they feel like they get to win now and they get their guy of the future that, quite frankly, there's really no way they would have been up for a quarterback 2 years from now.
Because the division's just, the whole division's in hard reset
right.
mode.
And what if they get hit with a tampering charge?
It's true. That is another, anyway. Yeah, which does seem to be coming. That is
the they're definitely getting hit with it. It's just whether it's like a first round pick like the Dolphins or more like third, fourth, which it doesn't sound good though. It sounds like if they escape with a second round pick, that sounds nice because the Dolphins did not.
It's funny that you say, well, there's no way they'll be back here. I do think that every year, and then somehow the Falcons are always back at number eight, making a controversial skill player. Selection. So we'll see what happens with the Falcons next year. Connor, we'll stay at quarterback, though. Maybe the answer to this question is both. I always have like a negative framing. But the answer could be both to this question, to be clear. But who is more likely to still be the starting quarterback for their team in 3 seasons, Jaden Daniels in Washington or Drake May in New England?
I actually think Drake May, which might surprise some people. He was QB2 for me. I think when you look at May, he goes into a situation where they will sit him, I would imagine, behind Jacoby Brissett, which is good for Drake May. The supporting cast needs a lot of work. New England's going to start that today on day two of the draft. If they don't trade that pick, I've heard they are going to take wide receiver with their first, second-round pick, so that's a good start. I think ultimately with Drake, now that he goes to a spot where he could marinate a little bit is what I like to say, he's going to get to develop. They're going to buy in. They're going to give him a long, long window. With Jaden Daniels, it's not that he's not going to get a long window. He was the second overall pick in the draft. He is going to start right away. I do worry about the injuries that he could take if he doesn't learn how to protect himself. And that's a scary situation for any quarterback. So ultimately, the question's easy for me to answer because I just go with how I rank them. I thought Drake May was a better prospect. He's a bigger-bodied player, so the health concerns aren't as significant as Jaden Daniels. And Drake May is going to sit right away, which feels like it buys you even more time.
And Drake May, I almost no quarterback would I make the case. They actually should sit for a year. But this supporting cast, this just seems like the classic young quarterback killer. Seriously, hide him till at least after Thanksgiving. Maybe give him some run after Thanksgiving. Let him start 6 or 7 games. But he is not set up. Even if they draft like 2 or 3 receivers.
It doesn't matter. We don't even know if these guys can coach, by the way.
It's true. This is a very, very, very unproven coaching staff.
Yeah, I'm generally against the idea that, like, oh, he'll sit for 1 year and, like, learn how to play the position. Like, a lot of these guys they're either good or they're not. Players develop, but, like, you can see right away, like, Zach Wilson, man, you could tell right away things weren't going to go well. For a lot of other quarterbacks, you can. This might be the exception. This is a really set up to fail level of team. And like you said, Pat, wouldn't mind seeing him in the second half of the season. You almost certainly should see him at some point, but like to throw him into a system where Pop Douglas is his top receiver in week 1 does not feel like you're setting him up to succeed, even though obviously we do think they're drafting a receiver. Like, this is not what a supporting cast built for a plug-and-play quarterback looks like. And I think May is good. I also had him as my second quarterback. But do I understand, and I almost think they should, give him a few weeks to really get his legs under him before they throw him into a talent setup that's just not nearly close to average in the NFL? Yeah, they could probably give him a few weeks, and it really isn't going to hurt the team's long-term outlook.
And to Connor's point about this, like their skill sets, comparing Jaden Daniels to Drake May, I still think Jaden Daniels could be a star, of course, but I still think even if Drake May sits for a year, he's more likely to be starting in 3. Well, of course he would be. I guess
there's
a few of rope there, but Jaden Daniels, I just don't know how the skill set translates to the modern NFL, where the things he does well are deep passing and big runs, and the guy can absorb contact despite weighing 190 pounds or whatever. But that worked in the SEC. Do not think it's going to work in the NFL. I have talk about Michael Penix getting all the he's super old love. Jaden Daniels also super super old. So
yeah, it's been a funny draft process how picked apart Drake May and Michael Penix were, and I don't see the same criticism, you know, for Jaden Daniels and JJ McCarthy, which is very odd to me.
Well, JJ McCarthy's at least on the younger side,
right?
JJ McCarthy is
but he's
weird.
Not ready to play.
He's not. had the reverse prospect journey, kind of. I feel like he was picked apart his entire college career. All anyone did was focus on the negatives.
You're so right.
Won the national title, they're like, well, actually, he does do some stuff well.
100%.
And like, it's always the reverse where Michael Penix in December, like, Penix has got to be the QB2.
Yeah.
But you're hearing people say, justifiably so, watching him light up these games.
Right.
And then he gets picked apart. And then JJ McCarthy, after 3 years of negative narrative, went positive. But we got to move on we're going to talk about an offensive tackle. Oh, only sort of, though, Connor. Is the Chargers' selection of Joe Alt over Malik Nabers going to live in infamy? You know, Kyle and I are fantasy guys, so we immediately think, well, yep, terrible decision not to take the fantasy guy and Malik Nabers, who I've seen in cut-ups doing insane things. Or do we just have to accept Harbaugh for what it is, and was this a good pick for the Chargers?
This one's tricky for me. Alt was my third overall player. Nabers was my fourth overall player. They definitely needed a wide receiver. I think Nabers is pretty special. Like, he really is a DJ Moore clone to me. He's so explosive. Now, the argument, too, is, like, your whole thing with the Chargers is, oh, they want to run the ball. Nabers' presence on the field makes life easier to run the ball. So, now I love Joe Alt. I think he's a great player. But they have a good left tackle in Rashawn Slater.
No.
It feels
top
like
top five right tackle. He's really good. I totally agree. In terms of overall, like, big board style rankings, you can tell me you had Alt over Nabers. That's fine. Alt is a really, really good prospect. But this team, Pat, who do you think this team's third receiver is? Quentin Johnston, Josh Palmer. Who do you think their third receiver is?
The pick 37 today.
Is still Jalen Guyton?
Yeah.
No, it's currently Darius Davis or Simi Fehoko. And those are the only four players on the roster at wide receiver. I think in a vacuum, these two players are very equal, as Connery pointed out, having 3-4. But man, you've got Justin Herbert in the prime of his career.
So you would have taken, even as a ball knower, Connor, you would have taken Nabers.
Yeah, I would have taken Nabers. He's the wide receiver one in any other class besides Jamar Chase's year. Like, it's that simple. It's very Waddle to Marv's Chase. And they needed it. They simply needed it. Like, they didn't take Quentin Johnston. Who the hell cares? You're not looking at it like, well, we got to make sure we get Quentin Johnston right. They weren't even there. Like, it doesn't matter.
They weren't there, kind of. I make the point almost literally every show. Harbaugh's obsessed with him because he had a big game against them in the national semis last year for TCU. That's probably my theory on Quentin Johnston.
I hope he figures it out in year two. It's not a bad pick. Alt's an awesome player. They'll run the hell out of the ball. They'll get this team right. It's just one of those ones where, like, it's more fun if they took Malik Nabers.
Justin Herbert taking 9 sacks this year. So at least he has more time to throw to his really bad wide receivers.
Uniform will look like it's off the rack every post game.
It's true.
Like, wow. Good. They got this right.
Connor, we have one more question before you get you out of here. And it's about JJ McCarthy, who you mentioned. It was sort of pre-draft gospel that Minnesota would be the best landing spot for JJ McCarthy. A guy who was uncertain about such a supporting cast, such a coaching staff. But is he the best quarterback for the Vikings? I can never entirely tell if they were truly into getting connected to J.J. McCarthy, if they were really fantasizing about getting to number 3 for Drake May. He's going from the run-obsessed system to the throw-first attack. Just how do you feel about a guy who wasn't asked to do a lot in college and is now going to a system that, at least under Kirk Cousins, like, threw first and asked questions later? What do you think about the fit of JJ McCarthy in Minnesota?
I like any quarterback that gets to go to Minnesota. Like, that's the easy answer. But this would have been right where they took him for me. Like, all the other guys had to go in front for it to be the JJ McCarthy selection. And that's how it went. And I know people won't, like, it feels like nobody will listen to this. I was a believer and felt pretty good about the info I had that Minnesota would have taken Michael Penix if he was on the board. Everybody in the world is telling you that McCarthy was always their guy. There's, like, no way for me to be the winner here because Minnesota has him now. So he was always our guy. But Drake trading up for Drake May, that made a ton of sense as priority number one. Everything Drake May does well, throwing the middle of the field, would have been perfect for this team. I think they came to the realization, like, we can't get there. Like, the Giants and the Vikings came to the realization, we can't get to 3 because New England's like, why are we trading and letting you take the guy we should take? But then I think it came down to, like, okay, we're comfortable with Michael Penix. Michael Penix, stunner, going to 8. And Minnesota was like, okay, like, now we got to flip with the Jets and get McCarthy, which is fine. I still think McCarthy was always a top of second round player that was going to go earlier. Another guy that mechanically clean, I don't think he'll be this elite playmaker at the next level as much as he had mobility at the college level. The deep ball accuracy was not consistent. He's really a one-pitch pitcher, and I always get a little worried about those guys at the next level when it's like fastball. If it's all fastball or all changeup, like, there's going to be deficiencies when teams adjust you either way. So O'Connell will mask his issues when he has to play. I just don't see the upside with McCarthy that he'll ever be a top 12-ish quarterback. And I felt like they had one for a while in Kirk Cousins.
So do you think this was a scenario, this is the true final question, that the Vikings were secretly comfortable with, like, okay, we're not going to get Drake May. Someone might take Penix. Well, then we're still happy with J.J. McCarthy. Or do you think this was like a draft day, like, well, we weren't really planning for this, but it is J.J. McCarthy after all?
I think O'Connell's so confident that McCarthy was a good enough prospect that they're not like waking up today like, damn, we're fired. Like,
or like, damn, we should probably start watching some film on this.
Right. It is fascinating how much they put their foot on the gas to get Dallas Turner. Like, they traded a lot of draft picks last night. They gave the Jets an extra 4 and 5 to flip, and then they gave up a lot of picks to go get Dallas Turner. Exciting player. But there was clearly like a feeling of our defense better be really good with Brian Flores this year. We spent a lot of money. We traded up for a premium pass rusher. So I don't know. I think there's, I don't want to call it disappointment, but it's just so much. Like, it's funny to me how encapsulated we get in the draft. But then when it just comes down to how you project actual football playing out, it was easy to see Drake May having so much success in this offense one day. For me, and not everyone agrees with this, it was very easy to see Michael Penix having a lot of success in that offense. They end up with J.J. McCarthy. He'll just, to me, always be okay. Like, leave you wanting, like, damn, I wish we had a little bit better of a guy. But he's not bad enough that we're like, we got to cut him, even if it's a $20 million dead money hit, and draft somebody else.
You just described Zoomer Kirk Cousins, is what you did, and Connor Rogers. And but I can't say I would have traded my entire 2025 draft for Dallas Turner, but
no.
What do I know? I wish we did not have to send Connor Rogers out of here, but we do. He's a very in-demand man, many hits coming up. He's going to be all over NBC Sports and Roto World this weekend. Check out his stuff. Connor, your pre-draft stuff was so, so good. Thank you for the mock drafts. Thank you for the content, and thank you for stopping by.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. Great to talk to you. Pat, I know we will be reconnecting for some day three stuff, which will be a lot of fun.
It's true. So, I'll see you on Saturday. I'm going to learn who these players are right now.
Yes, there we go. Thanks, dudes. Talk soon.
See you, Connor. Thank you so much for taking the time. And Kyle, thank you so much for taking the time. We'll be right back after this. The NFL draft is underway, and we have you covered with analysis of every pick from round one. We'll continue with pick-by-pick breakdowns for rounds 2 through 7 this weekend. And do not forget to check out our positional rankings, player interviews, and news updates around the league. Go to NBCSports.com/NFL Draft today.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
All right, we have a whole show sheet. Let's just spend the next 30 minutes talking more about Penix. I mean,
what is going on?
I can't stop tweeting about it.
It's by far the craziest pick of my lifetime, I think.
It really, like, I really think it is. I'm already getting prisoner of the moment much. Like, dude, they're taking a 24-year-old who's not going to play for 2 years. Like,
the GM
in the top 10.
The GM said, I believe it was GM, maybe it was the head coach, but
no, GM, the GM, Terry Fontenot. If he sits 4 or 5 years, that's good. That's good.
What? I know. Yeah, that was the quote I had. It's, I mean, I sort of.
They didn't tell Penix. They didn't tell Cousins. Did they tell anybody?
I know. None of it. I mean, I guess you don't tell literally anyone, because if you tell Cousins, it probably leaks. His camp is pissed about it, and they leak it.
They get it killed. Ahead. They get it killed.
They get basically. It killed, exactly. Or even if they can't get it killed by the Falcons, they tip their hand and Minnesota jumps them. You know, they jump them to 6 or whatever, or to 7. So maybe, I guess good on them for not getting it leaked anywhere. But also that fosters terrible relationship with both players.
Look, Kirk Cousins should be rightfully royally pissed off.
Yes,
he absolutely. Should be ragingly angry and totally justified in being ragingly angry.
Yeah, I mean, it puts him in a, like you guys already talked about, it puts him in a terrible spot. It puts Penix in a terrible spot. The fans aren't happy. And the Fontenot thing, it's a good thing if he doesn't play 4 or 5 years. I get that what that implies is that it meant Kirk Cousins had a great 4 or 5 year stretch, but it goes back to the, what do you win when you win? If the good outcome is your pick contributes zero value on his rookie contract, how are you taking him?
Just, I'm going to keep yelling. We're going to be yelling about this one all summer. It's a shame we don't have Denny here today. Denny has been fired, by the way. That's why he's not on the show. No.
Well, he said he loves the pick. He didn't. We started painting Denny as loving this pick. He loves the old pick, too.
Denny is on a field trip. Not a bit.
Not a bit.
He said someone on the field trip listens to the show, though. So hopefully.
Oh, interesting.
We do them proud. Who was not done proud on draft night? In addition to the Falcons. Our guy Brock Bowers, Kyle, looked like despondent when the Raiders called his name. He just, might be projecting, but he couldn't even force a smile. He looked visibly upset when he was selected by the Raiders, and it's understandably so. He's an elite pass catching, catch first tight end, now going somewhere that has Devontae Adams and Jacoby Myers as target hogs, but another extremely good young top 50. Tight end and Michael Mayer. And was Brock Bowers the biggest loser, fantasy loser, I guess I should say, amongst the elite fantasy prospects last night? Because how does this one turn out well for, and it's another pick, how does this one really turn out well for anybody? You're drafting Brock Bowers and he might not even be one of your top 3 targets. He probably will be the number 3 target, maybe even the number 2 ahead of Jacoby Myers. But the Raiders, I guess, were taking the best player available. But it just does not strike me as a good landing spot for our guy, Brock.
No, without a doubt, it's not. I mean, like you said, when I'm going in and doing the projections, I will have Devontae Adams with a massive target share, Jacoby Myers with a reasonable target share, and then you're at third, in which I can't even say all of the tight end targets go to this player. Because Mayer is a good player. He's also he was a good blocker in college, so he should get on the field a decent amount. I expect Brock Bowers to out-target him. But there are a lot of landing spots where I'm like, oh, the backup tight end doesn't play if Brock Bowers is there. That's simply not true of Michael Mayer, because he was a good prospect, flashed a little bit after the catch and some of their efficiency metrics last year. He'll play some. He won't end Brock Bowers' career. He won't keep him from getting on the field or starting, but he'll eat into his target share. And that's on top of the fact that these are all targets coming from either Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew. It's not like, oh, you're going to be dealing when you get your targets. You're a 10 yards per target player because you're the number 3 option on this, this setting the world on fire offense. That's simply not the case. And looking at it from a dynasty perspective, this team will probably be okay. They're not bottoming out and getting the top quarterback of next year's draft, I don't think. As much as I'm sort of giving Gardner Minshew he's not a great quarterback. It's not terrible.
He's a Pro Bowler.
Is he? Oof.
He was a Pro Bowler.
I'm sure, yeah. He's got a Tyrod Taylor Mickey Mouse Pro Bowl.
Believe me, it doesn't get more Mickey Mouse than the Gardner Minshew Pro Bowl appearance last year.
Last year's when the Pro Bowl
last year, I'm not kidding. And then I happened to see, I think I saw him trying to do one of the skills competitions. Really not getting it in that bucket there.
Well, the bucket was moving, to be fair.
Yeah, the bucket was, to be fair, the bucket was moving.
So, yeah, I mean, I just quickly tweeted out my top Dynasty 12, first round for Dynasty rankings, and I dropped him to 7. I think there was a pretty reasonable argument that he could be as high as 4. If he gets to a great landing spot, good quarterback, creative offense, he could instantly project for, top 6 fantasy numbers at the position. And if he hits his ceiling, he's, top 1 or 2 in a few years. I don't really see that outcome being particularly likely at this point. And when the outcome is more centered around, oh, he's got a good shot to be the tight end 11 or 12 as a rookie, and then probably not a ton of progression in a year or two because they're not going to have an elite quarterback and they're probably still having guys earning targets ahead of him. That just doesn't move the needle for me. He needs to be an instant top five or quickly, maybe not instant, but quickly top five guy. Whereas wide receiver like Brian Thomas, you have to start a ton of wide receivers in most dynasty leagues or running backs, like 2 to 3 plus 2 to 3 flexes. Just getting a wide receiver two, you know, like a top 24 fantasy option is a massive win. Getting the tight end 11 is just not a win that I care to shoot for. So yeah, I have him right now at 7. I could even see him dropping like 1 or 2 more spots depending on like what the Bills do. Because obviously they need a receiver badly. So yeah, this is probably of the guys who were drafted in the first round for fantasy purposes, biggest faller, I think.
Listen, talent is the most important thing by far. But when it comes to the draft, like landing spot, I mean, there have to be haunting counterfactuals. There were probably guys who didn't get a second contract who might have been a Hall of Famer if they had just ended up with the right coach or the right team or the right quarterback. And then you see stuff like Michael Penix going to a place where he's not going to play for 2 years and Brock Bowers going to a run-first, crowded offense where he's maybe at best the number three weapon, and it's how that will derail and color his early career. The landing spot is just so, I mean, I'm not breaking any news here, but the landing spot is so important.
Yeah, I don't think it's dreadful for his long-term, don't think it's dreadful for his long-term outlook, like, will he be a success?
Because like, it is, though, because this guy already had a lot of injuries, like, you know, and like a tight end especially, I don't think you can really just be giving years away. I know tight end can be like a late.
I was going to say, I think most tight ends give the first year or two away anyways. But like the thing is, like long-term, like you said, talent matters most. Am I weighing this enough to like knock him out of the first round of my dynasty rankings? No. But I also want to draft players who have a good chance or have a chance of sending their value to the moon in their first year. Like Brian Thomas goes for 1,200. Like Brian Thomas goes for 1,200 yards in his first year. He's instantly like a top 7-6 dynasty wide receiver, and that's fairly realistic. Trevor Lawrence takes the next step, and he's just the most talented player on that team.
Not happening, but that's...
Which part of it, Trevor Lawrence?
The T-Law part, Denny. Denny's trying to call into the show to yell at you to say that's not
good. I mean, look, Trevor could also just be Kirk Cousins and throw for a lot of yards, right? Like, he doesn't have to even, like, take the next step in a, like, he's Joe Burrow way. He could just be, like, throws the ball a lot and a little more efficient. Or Xavier Worthy. Like, obviously, Xavier Worthy being, I'm not going to say he's going to be the top receiver for Patrick Mahomes, but could he be, like, the second or 2B for Patrick Mahomes and put a bunch of splash plays on the table and people are saying he's the dynasty wide receiver 10. Obviously, like that narrative feels very realistic. Not saying it's the most likely outcome, but in what realistic sense do you see Brock Bowers going out and immediately balling out and becoming like he's the dynasty tight end you have to have? I don't see that happening in his first year. So yeah, I don't think he's going to lose value. But I don't see a scenario in which you're saying, oh, man, we should have been drafting at the 102 if we knew this was happening.
We'll find out in a minute on Xavier Worthy. Kyle, besides Brock Bowers, the other guy we could not stop yelling about in the run-up to the draft was Bo Nix. I couldn't decide if he was good or not. finally, when I was doing his pre-draft profile write-up and kind of having to take everything together in totality, I opened the door in my mind to, okay, maybe this guy actually is worth a first-round pick. I know he's so old. I know he didn't perform for Auburn, but his career arc was like a little too comparable to Joe Burrow's for me. He's not a player like Joe Burrow. He's kind of a totally different quarterback, but he wasn't totally different in that he was otherworldly efficient, like just otherworldly efficient, I mean, historically so. His final year in college, I mean, he's completing almost 80% of his passes, averaging almost 10 yards per attempt, three picks to 45 touchdowns. Like, you just don't get more efficient than that. It was the best possible setup. He was not being asked to. He was being asked to do very Mickey Mouse stuff. Speaking of Mickey Mouse, so there were only a few spots he could really land in the NFL and maybe translate that success. But it certainly felt like Sean Payton was one of those spots. And number 12 is really early for a player like Bo Nix. But is Bo Nix just really the perfect Sean Payton guy, and vice versa?
Yeah, I mean, I think he fits a lot of what we saw this offense do last year and what Sean Payton's offense has done in previous years. I think the coaching fit is great, but what I will say is, like, man, who's he throwing to? I think the screen game to running backs is going to be nice. I like
it. It is. Yeah.
Williams, I love Julian McLaughlin. And even last year, I think it was mostly just based on scheme. Samaje Perine led all running backs in yards per out run. I think all of those guys can contribute as pass catchers. That's not what you want to build the offense out of. And after that, it's really just Courtland Sutton and Marvin Mims, who I don't even think this team likes. So, he fits a lot.
Hey, Sean Payton didn't draft Marvin Mims, though. That was the oh my God, it was Sean Payton who drafted Marvin Mims.
Well, when you have little Jordan Humphrey on the roster, someone's got to get the boot. When you have Brandon Johnson on the roster.
Yikes.
I think in the long term, this is good. This is the spot you want him in. Do I feel a ton of excitement about Courtland Sutton as his top receiver and a ton of running back screens? I think this is a game management situation for at least the first year, which is maybe fine for him, though. Like, he's making a big leap from the Pac-12 to the NFL. Maybe just have him be a check down player with a lot of running back targets and running back carries until you find your alpha wide receiver, and then open the offense more as he develops and as the offense develops.
The question for me with Bo Nix, this keeps coming back to, is an awesome game manager his floor or his ceiling? Because if that's your ceiling, I mean, I guess maybe some teams would take that at number 12 overall.
Yeah.
But you really cannot be having good game manager as your ceiling at number 12, I feel like. Maybe you can if you're Sean Payton and you're just trying not to get fired. Sean Payton's already feeling the heat a little bit. I mean, he's got at least two more years. Yeah. He won't get fired until, like, at least October 2025. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's safe no matter what for all of 2024. I just cannot decide if you can really invest this kind of draft capital in a guy where that might very reasonably be his ceiling. And we'll see.
I think his ceiling is somewhere above that. I think, like, he's really good under pressure. He's got good mobility.
He's good under pressure because he never goes beyond, like, one read and just throws the ball instantly. Eric Froton kept hammering on, Bo Nix got the ball out quicker than basically any quarterback in FBS football last year.
I mean,
that's good. It's good. It's fine. But it was also the system. I guess it could also be Sean Payton's system.
And another thing Eric pointed out is, one, like, pressure stats, I think they're important, but they're also not super stable college to NFL.
No.
And he was not pressured. It was a great offensive line, and he threw quickly. So he really just was not pressured hardly all in college, or at least in Oregon. So our sample size of what he did under pressure is very small. It's elite. It's some of the best you'll see, but it's hard to say, like, a few reps of a not-so-stable stat, how do they translate? I think he'll be good under pressure in the NFL, but if it turns out he was in a great system and he's actually not good under pressure, wouldn't surprise me. It's very hard to project these things. I think the ceiling is that he's elite under pressure. He knows where to get the ball to. He knows to get it out quickly. And unlike Penix, who doesn't take sacks but doesn't do anything with it, he's getting first downs under pressure. He's getting you what you need and not taking the bad, obviously, outcome of a sack. And he's more mobile than some. Actually, he's like this probably lesser athlete than Penix. Penix just refuses to run, understandably, for a guy with two ACL tears, two season-ending shoulder injuries. Penix does run, so he's a good scrambler. He's got a fine arm. I wouldn't say he's got, like, the noodle arm, can't make the deep throw. It's just not special.
It's just so, fine. Yeah,
it's fine, exactly. I think a just fine arm for a really talented player in the brain who also has good legs, like, that player can be really valuable in the life of their career. Like, I just watched Brock Purdy get to a Super Bowl, and I watched him probably would have gotten there last year if he didn't get hurt. I think he could be Brock Purdy plus. I don't think this team has the talent to support that at the moment. They could accrue it quickly. Marvin Mims could break out. Greg Dulcich, God willing, for my dynasty teams, could break out, and they could take a player next year. I don't know. I'm trying to spin the narrative. Mm-hmm. But, like, yeah, I agree with you. I probably wouldn't have taken him at 12. I think he's a pick 25, 26, 27 type of guy. You jump back into the first to get him. I understand it. And I think the ceiling is still good enough, like, to be the Tua, but maybe it translates to the postseason or against good teams, or the Brock Bowers, or not the Brock Bowers, Brock Purdy, who, like, was a few plays away from winning the Super Bowl. Like, those guys can get there. It just requires such a specific set of circumstances. And even then, like, Purdy didn't win it, neither did Garoppolo. So,
and he never
won. Yeah. I mean, that's tough, though. When you play in a league with Mahomes, maybe you just never win. So, same, you know, you played against Brady for a bunch of years. Sorry, bud.
Is the Broncos supporting cast better than the Patriots just by virtue of having Courtland Sutton?
Correct.
I'm not entirely sure, to be honest.
Like, what would the Patriots have to even hold over them?
They have Pop Douglas. They do have Kendrick Bourne.
Kendrick Bourne coming off a torn ACL.
Well, yeah, but he's a dog. They have KJ Osborne. I mean, these. Oh, so wow. I'm saying they've got three number threes, where the Broncos have one number two and what else?
That's, I mean, Mims is good.
Maybe. Is he actually? Yeah, I don't know.
Is Mims that different than Pop Douglas or KJ Osborne? I don't know about.
Probably. I mean, probably. Sean Payton did draft the guy. And then so it's pretty bad news for Marvin Mims that he was not a holdover pick and didn't get used. It's pretty bad that he was selected by Sean Payton and he was still like signing former Saints anyway.
I think once you get down to is KJ Osborne or especially Pop Douglas or Marvin Mims better, I don't think those things matter. We're arguing about like the smallest decimal. And to your point, which you started with, the difference between Cortland Sutton and anything the Patriots have is much bigger than Shore. Like I'll concede Marvin Mims.
It might be. They might not even keep Cortland Sutton, man. I guess
I don't think they get rid of him after getting rid of Judy. It would be kind of, I mean, at that point you would be talking about a team with the worst receiving corps in the league. It would be worse than the Chargers, who I think are the clear front runner for that award in air quotes. They would be worse than that. They'd be worse than the Giants pre Malik Nabers. They would be worse than the Patriots. I think that risk is way too much for them to get rid of Cortland Sutton this year. Maybe in the future. But
I think especially now they've committed to the rookie quarterback. But yeah. They're not going to trade Cortland Sutton. So you mentioned Xavier Worthy earlier. The number 32 overall pick, right? Or no, did they trade?
No, they traded up to the Bills. With the Bills.
Love to trade with the team that beats me in the playoffs every single year so they can take a glaring position of need that is also a glaring position of need for my team.
I know the fact that they also need a receiver. And supposedly, the trade chart said this was not that much value gained as far as first-round picks.
It was it was so negligible. But can Xavier Worthy make a rookie fantasy impact in a skill group that includes an aging Travis Kelce, a suspended at some point Rashee Rice, a never breaking out Marquise Brown. All these guys he's competing with, you know, have question marks, but he is competing with a lot of different guys. He is listed at 165 pounds, Xavier Worthy. Can he make a rookie fantasy impact, or is his impact going to be like MVS, like a smaller MVS? He's here to clear out space. And he'll work on the rest later.
Yeah, I made this point that I'll get to what Denny said. I made the point that like MVS played a role. It's like we call it the MVS role, but they do just want a clear out guy, right? He doesn't necessarily have to be getting targeted a ton. And then Denny astutely is like, well, it's also MVS. You know, of course, the role is not a high target per route run role when you're going 20 yards downfield. MVS, not a high target per route run player. Let's see someone else in that role. I do think the MVS role, how bad it is probably overblown because you're running a bunch of deep routes with Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback and you run a 4-2-1. That's going to lead to a lot more hits than it did with MVS. I still think it probably won't have a great target per route run, but he can also do a lot of the underneath stuff. He's not really like John Ross in that it was like, it's the 40 and what else do you have to rely on? And that proved to be the case with him. He does have a lot of ability to produce yak, especially coming out of the slot. So I think it'll be sort of like we saw at points in Devonta Smith's career, where A.J. Brown is the move the sticks guy. He's 14 yards, 12 yards downfield. But Devonta Smith is great both with the ball in his hands and moving down the field. So he's getting a lot of either high yak chances or high yardage, like 20 yards downfield chances. And that's what like an elite playmaker does. I think we kind of see that a little bit with Zay Flowers too. Scheme a bunch of touches. But he's got the speed to win deep outside targets. Like he's thick. He's not big, but he's thick. He can play outside and go deep, or you can scheme him yak targets. So it'll be sketchy which weeks we're going to be really frustrated by him, I'm sure, Worthy, that is, because we just won't know when he's going to hit the big one. We won't even know when his route rate will cross 60%, but he's going to hit the big one at some point, at a lot of points, frankly.
Xavier Worthy, it probably is getting underrated a little bit. Kind of to his detriment, he was used all over the field at Texas and in really different roles. Where his first year under Steve Sarkisian in 2022, he was turned into like a pure deep guy. And that just didn't really work. And he was finally, he was used more all over the field again last year. He is a good yak guy. So we do have to be careful not to over-focus on the speed and the deep threat. Where there could be a lot more here. We do need to properly focus on the weight. You can't play at that weight. And how much can he gain while still maintaining his speed? Guy's got to get up to at least 180 and probably 185, 190. I don't know if he can get up to 185 or 190, though.
Yeah, I'd be surprised.
That would actually be very concerning.
Yeah, I mean,
that would need to be gradual.
One example of something similar to that is Hollywood Brown. He weighed in the 160s, I believe, at the combine, and now everywhere his weight is listed in the 180s because, like, his second year in the NFL, he told reporters he had gotten up to over 180. I don't remember exactly what it was. And he still appears to have the speed. His like fantasy production hasn't hit, but I don't think it dynamically changed the way he plays a ton. At least that's not something I've noticed. So yeah, I think we could at least push 175. I'd be surprised if it's like 185 though.
Yeah, 185 is that's not happening. What's a realistic way? If our guy gets to 178, that would be amazing.
That'd be more
realistic is probably like 173, 175.
Probably. I think so too.
You probably should not pack on more than 7 or 8 pounds of muscle per season.
Exactly. I think Hollywood Brown's speed was a large factor in his game, but Xavier Worthy being able to be the fastest player, not just on the field, but on any pro football field ever, like almost literally ever.
Well, I mean, yeah, we'll see about that. Who even knows what he weighed when he ran that 40? I guess we do know what he weighed because he weighed in at the combine. He weighed
165. Yeah, you mean who knows what he was weighing like when he was playing and what else?
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
He would not run a 4.21 at 177. That's literally just like the physics of it. But generally speaking, he's probably the fastest football player in the league right now and one of the fastest to ever do it.
He's the fastest in a straight line where there's no defenders on the field.
100%. He's really fast. He's really fast with the ball in his hands too, but like you said, there are other factors as well. I don't think you want him, honestly, to get to 185.
That was sounded dumb the second it left my lips. Like we don't ever want that. Maybe 182 is where he should be. He is 5'11". He can weigh 100.
He has the frame to do it. I was going to point that out. Yeah, he's not like Tank Dell is, I think, 5'8", right? So if he pushes 175, that's a thick BMI. It's at least not a bad BMI, right? There is much more frame to put weight on for Xavier Worthy. The only concern is just how much it affects his speed. I do expect him to put on some weight in the NFL. It'd be kind of crazy if he didn't, frankly.
Man, I was so happy to get Rashee Rice in Dynasty last year.
Dude, I was trying to trade for him this year.
Okay, well, I mean, how should I feel? Am I still okay?
I think so. I mean, I just...
It is a totally, totally different role than what Xavier Worthy and even Hollywood Brown really. Well, Hollywood Brown does do a lot of underneath stuff these days. So it's feeling a lot better before he got arrested.
Yeah, I mean, that's the mitigating factor. But in terms of just like on field, how do I feel? I don't think this is really that bad. I think maybe another sort of comp role for Xavier Worthy could be Mecole Hardman if he ever caught a pass and didn't fumble every touch he ever had. Because like Mecole Hardman has the speed to go deep, but he was never like a 28-0 guy. It was a lot of, quote, gimmicky stuff in a way that like a fast player should be able to take advantage of. And he just didn't really seem to do that. And that's not, again, it's not the Rashee Rice role. I was really confident in Rice going into this year, and legal trouble aside, I would still feel comfortable with him playing alongside Worthy, especially because Travis Kelce at what, 34, I believe, maybe 35 at this point. And his regular season.
He's so distracted. Travis Kelce is so distracted, folks.
Now he's just old, and they can't play him in the regular season anymore.
First player in NFL history to have a girlfriend.
I mean, look, the data does point that out pretty starkly. If there's a chart, it's a bunch of dots at the bottom left of it, and then one top right.
One player ever.
Yeah. Girlfriends per player, and it's just Kelce at the top right. I do think like he's probably a load management player in the regular season. I mean, you keep winning.
He needs to be at this point. He's slowing down for sure.
I mean, it seemed like that's what they were doing last year. Yeah. Like, it seems like it's already started.
The restrictor plate did come off in the playoffs.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's like, it's NBA stuff. We have Patrick Mahomes. We'll get into the playoffs. Hell, we might not get the one seed. We might not even get home field advantage. We don't care too much about that. What we do care is having a Death Star from the wild card round onward. And Travis Kelce was peak Travis Kelce. Looked just as good as he did 3 years ago, starting in the playoffs. That's good for the fantasy outlook of the rest of the wide receivers who are just there watching him, you know, take it easy in the fantasy weeks, which is what we care about.
We just now desperately need to hope that Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift actually stay together. Because if they don't, the album coming out about what a bad boyfriend Travis Kelce was will wreck his confidence forever. He'll be down so horrific. We'll be right back after this.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The next stop on the IndyCar Series is Barber Motorsports Park in Alabama. The green flag waves at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock. Notice I didn't say what day. Assuming it's this weekend. The IndyCar Series Barber Motorsports. I can't say motorsports. This is a new thing. We found a new word. I cannot say.
I think you need to work all of your ad reads into more casual conversation. Like we're talking about Xavier Worthy's speed. You know what else is fast? And you just kind of slip it in there. IndyCars are fast, and they're on NBC at so and so time, as opposed to reading the copy. Because man, when we get you to the free throw line, a few seconds left on the clock.
It's Sunday, by the way, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, NBC and Peacock. Check out the IndyCar Series. It is really interesting stuff. They drive very, 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 very fast. Caleb Williams and his supporting cast. So we're talking about how bad the Drake May supporting cast is, how bad the Bo Nix supporting cast is. This might end up getting overhyped. A lot of times it's like, man, this rookie has a lot of weapons. When you look under the hood, it's more like, you know, it's like a 37-year-old guy. It's a rookie. It's a guy who's like always hurt. There's a little element of that with Caleb Williams. Keenan Allen is 30-something and always hurt. But he wasn't hurt until the end of last season. This supporting cast seems about as good as it's ever been for not just a rookie quarterback, but like a number one overall rookie quarterback. Yeah. Guy really is kind of a generational prospect, to use the overused word. He might be the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. And he has DJ Moore, who does everything. He has Keenan Allen, who does everything underneath, and Rome Odunze, who could start off his career doing everything deep. He has Cole Kmet, even, to be a big target on third down and in the red zone. Caleb Williams is being set up to hit the ground running, is he not?
Yeah, I think the franchise records for passing yards and touchdowns are pretty low for Chicago.
He needs to average 226 yards per game to break the Bears rookie record, Bears single season passing record. He needs 226 yards per game.
What does that amount to? Because, like, obviously he gets the benefit of an extra game.
I believe it's 38-39. I know. So it's 16 games. So the Bears' record is 3,838 yards. He needs 226 to break. Even in a 16-game season, he would need 240, which I think Caleb Williams can probably do 240 in his sleep.
Yeah, and 226, like – he can take a few weeks off. He can miss some time rolling an ankle. Like I mean, obviously, like, I'm talking about this because it's a low bar. It's easy to set yourself up to clear a low bar. But, yeah, he's probably going to set the franchise yardage record. He might do the touchdown record as well. I mean, yeah, he's set up – rookie quarterbacks haven't always hit the ground running, but he is set up for both the Bears' best season and one of the best rookie quarterback seasons we've ever seen. Just like you said, it's not only that he has all this receiving talent, but he's got such a diverse cast of Odunze can be the deep guy. DJ Moore can be such an elite tackle breaker, yak guy, do it all. And then anytime the defense devotes all their resources to covering those two guys, we can't let the big play happen. Keenan Allen is guaranteed to be open, you know, not as far downfield, but for an automatic catch. He's just so good getting open the short and intermediate area, and showed not only no signs of slowing last year, but frankly putting together one of his best seasons before he got hurt. So, yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to have him ranked as like that fringe QB one. There's a lot of muddling between QB like 10 and 15 that you could probably sell me on either way. I think
QB is not as deep right now. It's at a bit of a lower ebb. So like the bar is not quite as high to get in.
Oh, so you're telling me I can get him to like the 10, 11. I don't have to like 12, 13 it.
I think we probably can, because he's one of those guys. The system for Caleb Williams is Caleb Williams throwing a ton. Mm-hmm. I thought his over-under was 22.5. It's apparently 23.5 for touchdowns, Kyle, on DraftKings. Are we taking the over-under on that Caleb Williams touchdown total? I'm inclined to believe he's going to have at least 26, 27 in the can.
I'm inclined to the over as well. Adam points out that passing yards is only 3,500 on the dot. I'm sure they've run the numbers and those two things equal. I do not feel like they equal. I feel like the passing yards prop would be a bit easier to clear.
Yeah, I think so too. So we'll see. Caleb, listen, not that he needs – he's not going to have any – this is a really negative way to frame it, but he's not going to have any excuses if he doesn't get off to a hot start for his career, because he has the setup that rookie quarterbacks just dream about. There's not a whole lot to say about Marvin Harrison in Arizona. He's an elite wide receiver prospect, maybe probably the best since Amari Cooper. He may be the best since, like, the Julio Jones year. Maybe that's slightly too much praise in a class where he almost wasn't even the number one receiver. But can he threaten for wide receiver one status as a rookie? Or is that just too rich for Marvin Harrison? Kyler Murray was not good last season returning from the torn ACL.
Yeah, I mean, I think it somewhat is contingent on Kyler Murray being better. He doesn't have to be great, doesn't have to be the best version of himself, but better than he was last year feels like that needs to happen. But this team, like, who else are they going to throw to? Trey McBride's a really talented tight end. That's about it. That's, like, all I got for this team. Michael Wilson is, like, an outside perimeter guy who doesn't win a ton of contested catches but cannot create separation. And that's it. Like, this team just does not have anyone else to throw to, and they just drafted a guy who is capable of being the entirety of an offense, and he was, like, the entirety, like, half, literally half of the team's passing attack on a college football team that has another future first-round pick, plus Cade Stover, a tight end I like, plus I'm sure a deeper cast of receivers as well, but Megan Bucca is going to be a first-round pick next year. So, I mean, yeah, I actually think I probably will have him projected as a wide receiver one.
That I truly have not sat down, like, gamed it out yet, but I would not be surprised. It all comes down to Kyler Murray, because Kyler Murray has really never hurt for weapons. I mean, he's never had, like, elite supporting cast, but Kyler Murray had, until last year, had never had, like, a bottom five or six supporting cast. Like, mm-hmm. There's a dude who had DeAndre Hopkins. They went out and got Marquise Brown for him. Who else they've had?
We probably had late career Larry Fitzgerald for a year, I'd imagine.
I think it was like a year, yeah. But
and it was late career.
Late. The point is, he's had better supporting casts than some people, especially deep. Marvin Harrison is so good deep. Kyler Murray, you throw a great deep ball. Maybe it's time to actually start doing it. We'll just see what happens. We thought it was Cliff, but last year it was looking like it was not Cliff. It was looking like it was you, Kyler.
Yeah, that's some of, like... Oh,
Waste Marvin Harrison. Do not waste Marvin Harrison.
I think it's a little bit of Cliff and a little bit of last year. Like you said, last year's the first time we saw him with, like, really a bad supporting cast. You look at last year and you're like, oh, it's Michael Wilson draped in coverage. Maybe I'll just check it down.
Yeah, I'm looking real quick. Nah, I'm not going to look up. We'll look it up later. We'll talk about Marvin Harrison.
What were you going to look up?
No, don't worry about it. The Arizona Cardinals 2019 or 2020 supporting cast or whatever. What year was he a rookie? Yeah, it's been a while. I think 19 at this point. Yeah. Which, oof, man, a guy needs a better
resume. I mean, it wasn't the COVID year, so it had to be 19 or like
18. Yeah, he needs a better resume than what he has shown.
Yeah.
Is Brian Thomas, who I do really like as a prospect, is he too redundant as a deep threat to Gabe Davis in Jacksonville? Brian Thomas, I'm assuming, is faster. Really, 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 really good last year, but – is this just about, again, clearing out space over the middle of the field for Christian Kirk, Evan Ingram, Zay Jones? What should realistic rookie expectations be for Brian Thomas? And an offense that doesn't seem extremely well-designed at this point, to be frank. And, yeah, has a player with a similar on-paper skill set to him and just got paid a lot of money in Gabe Davis.
Yeah, I mean, Gabe got paid a lot of money. Like you said, though, he's undoubted. I mean, he's way faster than Gabe, but he's also faster and bigger and stronger and more agile than Gabe. Like, they sort of win in the same portions of the field, but they're not really winning in the same way. Gabe is fast, especially for his size. I wouldn't say he has elite speed. Brian Thomas truly has elite. This is not your everyday wide receiver. This is not even your everyday first round wide receiver type of speed. Not only, like, speed, period, let alone for his size, because he's a big dude, like 6'2 or 6'3, 209, something like that, if I remember correctly. He's a big dude, and he runs way faster than a dude of his size should. and that will help him get separation. So I think probably the big difference between last year and this year is that Gabe will play outside wide receiver 3/4, probably like actually clear out kind of role. And Brian Thomas will be the X who is getting separation and winning targets in the way that Calvin Ridley attempted to be, kind of did, but also I'd say part of it was usage, right? I do think part of it was the fact that they refused to ever give him an easy throw over the middle, but I don't think he was the peak of Calvin Ridley able to create separation at will. He did that in his prime, probably more so than route running than Brian Thomas, who's just going to do it with blistering speed. But I do think Brian Thomas will just on average be more open, have more space, make his quarterback's life easier than Calvin Ridley did last year.
Can Brian Thomas be a top 36 fantasy receiver, or is it just the role slightly too uncertain, the supporting cast a little too crowded?
I mean, he definitely could be, right? Like he could hit the ground running, be just splash play, splash play, splash play. But I understand where you're going with it. Evan Engram was a few catches shy of hitting the receptions record for a tight end.
I thought you were going to say just for the league.
Oh, no, no. Well, I mean,
it felt that way, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was 3, if I remember correctly, catches away from the all-time record. Not like last year. He was 3 from the all-time record for tight end in a season. And Christian Kirk is a good target earner. I don't have a ton nice to say about Gabe. But he could be the third target option, even just 3A. Gabe could go out and earn targets on a passing attack that's just good. So I think top 36 is right where he projects, maybe just on the outside. We probably should temper our expectations for these guys, especially the ones who are not like probably superstars early in their career. I like Brian Thomas. He's multiple tiers down from the prospect evaluation of Marvin and Malik.
Speaking of tempering expectations, are safe to say Ricky Pearsall and Xavier Leggett just auto busts in the show there.
Connor had Pearsall ranked really highly. I did not, but he's sort of a player who I'm a little willing to write off my concerns when the NFL is like, no, we like this guy.
I'm sorry, you saw me beginning to interrupt you. Kyle Shanahan has liked a lot of receivers in the past,
yeah.
And then instantly did not like them the second they arrived in town. And
hey, some of them come back from it. Brandon Ayuk famously
true.
Down bad doghouse and is now one of the most sought-after receivers on the trade market.
Is it kind of like a catch-and-fall guy? Like, they didn't really have that. It was a missing element of their offense last year, like a number 3 receiver who could just move the chains. But, like, I don't know. They were fine without it.
Even if
they're trading Debo or Ayuk, it's like, was it really necessary to use a first-round pick on a catch-and-fall receiver? It doesn't seem very great to me.
Yeah, his yards after the catch numbers were, like, not bad, just not special for a player who, like, when you watch him, he's got really good footwork. He's really agile. You would think that guy can really shake some defenders after the catch. And his final season, everyone's like, oh, Marv is not a after-the-catch guy. That's his one, maybe not weak point, but it's the one of the sort of less inspiring parts of his career. Marvin Harrison easily had more yards after the catch per reception, so obviously adjusting for the amount of catches Marv had, than Ricky Pearsall did, and their career numbers are very close. I do think some of that is scheme, and I think some of what we see from the Yak guys, like Debo lands in literally any one of the other 31 teams in the league, his Yak numbers are nothing like they are. They're very good, but they're not record-setting, like things we've never seen before. Ayuk is really good in all facets of the game. He's even better because of the system he plays in. I think Pearsall would be an above-average Yak player in a Shanahan system, and I think he would be that kind of guy who he can get open so quickly and not just at the line of scrimmage, but with like at the sticks, essentially. He'd be a perfect stick mover for this team. I hope that this doesn't foretell them trading Brandon Ayuk. It might it more does. So Debo Samuel. I think it's more so Debo Samuel. Right before we got on the show, we had a report from CBS Josina Anderson saying that
The Athletic's Josina Anderson.
Is she with The Athletic now? Is that like brand new?
She's with The Athletic. It doesn't matter. Anyways, just continue.
Where was I? I don't
report on Debo being
That the Patriots were I don't think she's The Athletic.
No, she is. She is. It's we won't have to litigate this on air. She is The Athletic though.
Okay, if you say so. That the Patriots had trade talks with the 49ers about getting Debo Samuel before the draft. This was not like, it didn't seem at least like draft night, but they're still in a spot where they need a wide receiver and have the requisite draft capital to land him. I think Debo would likely be the one that they'd be moving on from more so than Ayuk.
But sorry to take us back. I, for some reason, was thinking you're saying Diana Rossini. It was breaking news all day.
I know. I tried to.
Yeah, yeah. No, no.
It was like trying to emphasize Josina Anderson
is CBS. Sorry. Yeah. Diana was like all over the Twitter feed yesterday.
She's been hustling both via free agency and the draft.
So I cited her like 7 times yesterday. So I was like, no, mm-hmm. The Athletic. I know it's The Athletic.
I almost said I know who you're talking about.
Like, too. I'm saying entirely different words than you are, Pat, and you are not. Is Xavier Leggett, man?
He's one I'm not willing to look over.
The guy played 4 years at SEC football and had never posted more than 167 yards until last year. I mean, this just seems. David Tepper did not listen to the restaurant sign, and he probably like went to a South Carolina game last year. Like saw this guy look awesome. He's like, we're taking him.
I feel like South Carolina played UNC in Charlotte for a bowl game last year. If not, maybe it was two years ago. This might be a slightly made up, but I'm actually kind of confident that's the case. Maybe like you, it was NC State that I'm confused with. But like you said, also maybe Tepper was in South Carolina where he, you know, has a half-built building.
It's a very modestly built building that apparently.
And he's like, well, I'll just take a stroll on over to South Carolina and watch a football game. I'm sort of somewhat comfortable writing off Ricky Pearsall's sketchy profile because, one, he did a lot early in his career, especially adjusting for – he was on, like, I think an Arizona State team that was pretty not great, all things considered, passing-wise, and had good market share numbers. I think in his final season there, he got, like, 28-29%. Of the team's passing attack, it's a good number. He was productive throughout his career. He never hit the elite marks we want to see, especially from a fifth-year player. There are red flags. I had him ranked low. Kyle Shanahan and probably other NFL teams, there's a lot of buzz that Ricky could be a late first or early second. Don't seem as concerned. The red flags are just too glaring for me, trying to bet on the outcomes for dynasty and redraft purposes to be taking Xavier Leggett, not only as a prospect, but on top of the fact that he goes to a team with Bryce Young, who was just dreadful last year. I think Bryce Young will be better, but he has to be worlds better to be an average quarterback.
Kyle, in the Duke's Mayo Classic, played last September 2nd in Charlotte, Xavier Leggett had 9 catches for 178 yards against UNC in the stadium.
You said September?
Yes, in the stadium that David Tepper owns. It was a season-opening neutral site game.
Oh, and got it. I was confused because we also have Duke's Mayo Bowl. Everyone knows the famous Duke's Mayo Bowl.
The Duke's Mayo Classic, not the bowl. And
okay.
He went nuts in the stadium. David Tepper owned. That's when the pick was made.
Wait. Oh, did he?
Yeah.
What did he put up?
9 for 178.
Oh hell yeah! That's absolutely when Tepper.
That was the second made. Yep. Not a joke. Xavier Leggett had more yards in that game than he ever had in a season up until that point.
Oh my God, you're right. Wow, yeah, that's nuts.
Absolutely horrific pick.
Yeah, I mean, like, there are reasons. He's had coaching changes. He's had, like, family tragedies that have stood in the way of him producing. But he was on the field a decent amount early in his career. Not saying
he played a lot of football games.
He was active and able to play in a lot of football games. And different coaching staffs consistently did not attempt to get him the ball, did not see him earning the ball. It wasn't like he, you know, we see with some of these guys who are just straight up injured and just cannot play earlier in their career. He was available, right? And I also get another concern for me is that, sure, you have a late breakout, but you've fifth year, you figured it all out. You're as polished as it comes. You finally got it. He was a player who consistently scouts noted, just doesn't have doesn't have perfect footwork, doesn't have great footwork working through his routes. Like his routes aren't as crisp as other receivers, and that's after 5 years of football. I think part of that's his body. Like, he is a thick, bad-looking dude. It's hard to be extremely agile when you're built kind of like a running back. But even adjusting for that, I think the fact that he doesn't come out with a ton of polish and he doesn't come out with a ton of production outside of a really good final year, I'm sort of not willing to overlook his flaws in terms of what I'm going to be taking him in my dynasty leagues and redraft leagues compared to his ADP. I don't think I'm going to be able to get past the red flags. But Pearsall, like, maybe I should try and squint and see it. Even when I squint, I don't know if I see it with Leggett.
Well, Pearsall, like you said, at least landed in the right. I mean, Kyle Shanahan is the place you want to be if you want to try to, like, move past some college career flaws.
Mm-hmm.
And David Tepper, Bryce Young is not where you want to be. So unfortunate landing spot for the young man, Xavier Legette. Unfortunate that the show's over, but we're out of time. We talked about every skill player, I believe. Maybe not quite. Yeah, I think we did. We didn't get to talk a ton about Roma Dunze, but the conversation's just beginning. We're going to be talking about this quite literally all spring and summer and the lead up to the draft. So stick with us, as I know you will. Keep it locked to rotoworld.com this weekend as we evaluate every single draft pick. We have write-ups for every player who will be taken this weekend. It's going to be really good stuff from the entire gang. So for Kyle Dvorak, Virginia Carter, who is not here and has been terminated and has been rehired, I'm Patrick Daugherty. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back later.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.